I think that taking time off is really, really important. And I think it only took me, 9 years to realize that.
Welcome to the Cloud Machine Podcast, your all-access pass to the music industry. I'm your host, Matt Landry, and every week we immerse you in the music world, uncovering industry insights, offering expert guidance, and exploring the stories that influence the industry. The Cloud Machine Podcast is brought to you by Eights, the innovative creative agency behind some of your favorite live concerts and tours. Want to take your music to the next level? Join our vibrant community on the Eights Network Discord. And with that, let's get started with today's episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Cloud Machine Podcast. This week, we're thrilled to have the incredibly talented Jade with us. Jade is a dynamic pop artist, and she's been captivating audiences with her emotive music and powerful performances. With her latest hits like I Don't Want to Hate You and last Friday's single, Absurdist Reality, Jade is making waves in the music scene with her new and unique approach to writing and recording. Eights Creative has had the pleasure of musical directing and performing with her for the past few years, and today we're diving into her journey, her creative process, and what's on her musical horizon. Hi, Jade. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am fantastic. Living, laughing, and loving,
as we say.
I want to start off the podcast by asking you about your favorite live show experience as a fan.
So I've been to so many shows, like genuinely, I went through a phase there. I think for the year right before the pandemic, I went to like 21 concerts.
Yeah. Well,
it was actually too much. I got to the end of it and I was like, I don't even want to go. But during that, I went to see the 1975 at Budweiser stage when they were doing their A Brief Inquiry tour, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
And that was like one of the best shows. It's one of the things that like, I can't remember what made it so good. And I think that that's like part of what made it so good.
Right.
Is like, you just go in and you're completely like enthralled and encapsulated in like the whole, like the sound design, the stage design, like everything was perfect and beautiful and amazing. And I love that show.
There's something about the 1975 with this podcast, and specifically, it probably not with the podcast, but it's probably because I ask a lot of my guests that are like in like the more of the pop indie scene to come onto this podcast. And the 1975 seems to be like a major reference for a lot of people, especially with their live show. And it's just crazy to see. Is there anything that you remember, like maybe a song from that performance specifically at the Budweiser stage that you keep on sort of referencing or thinking about?
I mean, yes and no. I can't remember the name of it right in this very moment.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's one of like the slower ones, and it just like the way that the song itself builds, especially live, was like something I had never seen before. And I didn't have a great view of the stage because their stage design at the time was like those, it was like a box.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Folded up. And I was like on the one side, but I don't know, everything about that show, they just know how to do a live show. Like right. I've seen them so many times now, and every time it's A, different, but B is like, you're just on a different planet.
Right. Yeah. And can I ask you what makes a live show memorable from your point of view? Is it forgetting sort of that you're almost there and in the world is sort of like,
I think
the world doesn't exist except that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think it's like, because sometimes you'll go to a show and you'll like, I mean, at least for me, having gone to so many, I think like, forgetting A, what time it is, B, where you are, C, that you have to leave soon, like what place you are in their set list, like how much longer you're going to be there. I think it's just like a complete loss of all of those feelings. Cause sometimes you'll be at a show, you'll be in the audience, you're like checking what time it is. You're like, all right, you know, I don't know.
Oh yeah. You see like the clock in the arena at the top left and you're like, okay, how long is this going to go? They went
on at like 9:15 and it's now like, 10:15. They're probably going to be done soon. They're probably going to do the encore. They're going to do the whole thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you do, basically what you're saying is that you don't want to have that feeling.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
If you have that, then you're like, you're still in your body. Like,
yes.
You know what I mean? Like, you're still in your head. You're still thinking about all the things you have to do. It's just like, I don't know. I think that the best live experience can get you away from that.
Fantastic. For listeners who maybe don't know Jade yet, what is the project that you've worked on or work with or released that would best represent your work?
I mean, the most annoying answer would be what I haven't put out yet.
We've had that before. And it's great. It is a great answer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, it's true because it's the most recent representation of like artistically where I'm at.
Yeah.
But on that exact note, the best representation would be the project that I put out, I don't know when, 2022, maybe.
Yeah.
The I'm Sorry It's Not My Fault project, mm-hmm. only because it is the most recent representation of me. And it feels like that project, while not entirely me, has a lot of like foundational elements to like who I am as a person and as an artist, like within those songs.
Mm.
Yeah. So,
yeah. And would you say, would you sort of, because you've had a couple more recent singles, would you say that you associate yourself with like entire projects, like EPs or albums more than the singles themselves?
Yes and no, because before I started doing projects, I was fully singles based. Like me at 18, I was like, I'm not putting out a project. It's not happening.
Right.
I'm just doing singles until there's like a desire for a project. That was like my thought process.
Yeah.
And then I, you know, had a distribution deal and then I had to start making projects because they were like, we don't really do singles. We just do projects. Right. Okay. Great. So, yeah, I think after that, I started thinking in terms of projects, but I also think that projects can be an accumulation of singles so that you can kind of get the best reach in terms of releasing. Because sometimes when you put out a project, people like don't listen to the whole thing, which is really upsetting, but it's like an attention span thing.
Right. I've been hearing lately that like the industry and the artists and especially like the streaming platforms are trying to push like more and more like projects, like full length projects, or at least like singles that like lead to a project.
Yeah.
How have you been feeling with that? Yeah.
Yeah. I think like signed artists definitely are, but I don't think as an independent artist, it's as easy to kind of do that because obviously there's a lot of like costs involved with properly releasing projects.
Yeah.
And it can be really devastating when you put your heart and soul and blood and sweat and tears into a project and then you don't have the means to actually put it out, you know?
Yeah. So no, it's tough. How do you balance that? So from a business perspective, I've been told recently, I don't know if I believe this and we'll get into this later, but I sort of believe it, but there's a little bit of salt there, if you know what I'm saying. Yeah. They're like the music industry is like 80% like promotion and 20% artistry. And I heard this in a conversation. I was like, okay, well, there is some meaning to that, but also like from an artist standpoint, like you shouldn't necessarily be thinking like that. Where do you stand on like the whole like promoting versus artistry, and is there a line there for you? What are you doing?
It's hard because like any industry executive that you talk to tells you like you need to be posting on TikTok.
Yes.
Like any meeting that I have ever had in my entire artist career, which has been long, has been like, okay, yeah, music's sick. Yeah, that doesn't really matter if you're not on TikTok, if you're not like posting 17 times a day at 7 a.m. and then at 8 a.m. and then at, you know, the rest of them post them at 9 o'clock. But I don't know. It's really upsetting, but I do think that it's kind of true. If you don't have the means to promote your music, it's naturally not like the algorithm doesn't work in a way that pushes you the way that you want it to, if that makes any sense. It's really paywalled. You really have to you have to pay for promotion and like or hope that a TikTok blows up. But again, like that's still a different, that's a whole different lottery, right?
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So, yeah.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I want to get into the quote segment of the podcast, which you highlighted beforehand that you I don't know. Yeah. You have a few thoughts on this, which I'm excited to get into. But yeah. For those of you who maybe it's the first time listening to the podcast, hopefully it's not your last, but we do a quote segment on the podcast. Last year it was the Erykah Badu quote comparing artistry to music business and how they are maybe the same, how they are different. The lines that artists cross and different perspectives on that. This year, 2024, we take a quote from 2004 from Joni Mitchell. Now she says that she heard somebody from the music business saying this. So she says, I heard someone from the music business saying that they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate. Now this is from 2004. So 20 years ago. Jada, I'd like to know your first instincts when you heard the sentence.
I mean, my first instincts were like, how do I talk about this without sounding pessimistic?
Sure.
But like, it is kind of true. And as someone who's like, A female, B, been in the music industry since I was 13, like, it is true. Like I used to, as a kid, when I was like stubborn and thought I knew what I wanted artistically, like anyone that I walked into a room with and I told them what I wanted to do, it was like, oh, she's like stubborn. She's like hard to deal with. We just want you to do this. And because I was stubborn and young, I was like, I don't want to do that. Why would I do that? And so I think, and then, you know, naturally those people like come and go and you cycle through them. But it, I mean, like, yeah, that's kind of exactly what happens. And it sucks. But I mean, 20 years ago, if we were on this road and we're still on it.
Yeah. I guess my question is, do you think it's evolved since then?
Not really. Not really.
Okay. And which part of the quote sort of sticks out to you? Because to me, and through various previous conversations with individuals, there seems to be a lot of people concentrating on the industry not necessarily looking for talent anymore.
Yeah.
And then there's people that sort of talk about the industry wanting a certain look and a willingness to cooperate. There's like three different things there. To really highlight, is there one that like is specific to you?
The willingness to cooperate is, I mean, it's like a double-edged thing though. Cause it's like, obviously you have to be down for like teamwork and, like cooperate with certain things.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know, honestly, I'm going to spin this a little bit more positively, but I don't think that not looking for talent is the answer, because I think that naturally those things come and go. Even if someone say puts out a song and it's like a one hit wonder situation, it's if you don't have like if you don't have like all three of those things, like looking for talent, a certain look, and like a willingness to walk away, it's like it kind of, all of those things are necessary, I think.
I completely agree.
Yeah. Like, I think that we've gotten to a place where we're looking for at least two of the three.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's like, yeah. And honestly, I think nowadays, because of the pool of artists, the music has to be good. Like, it doesn't matter the genre. Like, the music has to be good. It has to work with a certain audience.
Yeah.
And, you know, more and more, I really believe that there's flexibility, and I don't want to say flexibility, maybe openness is the right term here, but with a certain look, because there's so many, the industry is so open now, and you know, any sort of, I don't want to say anybody, but
yeah,
like anybody can sort of pop off. But it's the willingness to cooperate that's a little.
But I mean, like I said, like teamwork is really, really important. And it's not, I think that the way that it's kind of put in this quote does have a more negative connotation.
For sure.
But I do think that like a willingness to cooperate, like you have to give and take, right? You have to, like, for example, when I was signed to my deal, we would have meetings for marketing and things like that. And it was like, they would throw a bunch of ideas at me and I would take like one or two of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, okay. You know what? The TikTok thing's like not working for me. It doesn't feel authentic. It feels like I'm playing a character. I don't like it. And then it was like, okay, well, what if you started vlogging? And I was like, that I can do.
Right.
I love that. And then, so I started doing that and it's actually become like one of my favorite hobbies.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like you give and you take, and there are certain things that you can hold your guard up about, but there are other things that you do have to cooperate on, because it is at the end of the day, a business.
Yes. Where do you think that this business and this industry is going? Very general.
Yeah. It's hard to say, like it changes every day. I think I'm personally, and I could be so wrong, but this is just me and what I would like to believe. I'm seeing like the TikTokification of things kind of die out a little bit.
Yes.
Thanks.
Yeah, in a good way. Yeah.
Like I just want that to be over. I miss when TikTok was like funny videos. Like, you know, I just want it to be what it is. I don't want it to touch the music industry. Like I get when songs pop off, you have your Apple dance.
Oh, like, yeah. Love an Apple dance.
Yeah, we love the Apple dance. But I don't know. I think that it's like it got too serious and it kind of like killed the like sparkle that it had. So I hope that the industry kind of goes in a way that's like just away from TikTok. That's all I can ask right now. I don't know where it's going to go. I just want it away from that platform.
Right. Do you think there's something after TikTok? And if so, what do you think it is?
For sure there is. Like
of course.
Same thing before it even came out, you know? It's just like, I don't know what that's going to be. I don't work in app programming. so I don't really know.
Yeah.
I think what you'll start to see and what we're already kind of seeing is like tight-knit community building.
Yes.
You have like Discord, you have Weverse, which Ariana Grande just joined. Like I was on Weverse a long time ago. Mind you, that's like a big, I want to say, like K-pop space.
Right.
But I think you're seeing, and I mean, even with Instagram doing like the channels and you have close friends and you have specific like close friends posting now, I think that it's a lot more like community driven as opposed to public driven.
Yes. And I feel like, especially with the Instagram, you know how like artists are like creating their own channels now and stuff?
Yeah.
It's I feel like because of the algorithm, the algorithm has sort of like corrupt like people's like pages. So and they're not like seeing the people that they actually want to follow. I feel like people want to see the people that they actually like and follow now. And it comes back to the community and sort of fostering those communities, which is fantastic, honestly, for music specifically, because it's all about that. Anyway.
Sure. Well, I mean, like I have a really close relationship with like all of my fans. Like I make a conscious effort to like answer every single one of my DMs.
Right. Right.
Not every single one. Some of them are weird.
Sure.
But like, I do make a conscious effort to like talk to people that love my music and like, I'm having full conversation. Like I know about their lives and like, it's important to them. And it's important to me to like build that, because at the end of the day, like the music industry hasn't changed that much. It's all word of mouth. It's all like, sometimes it's Instagram ads, but most of the time it's word of mouth for like someone to go and be like, oh my God, you should check out this artist because first of all, they're a great person. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing right now too, where it's like, the people you support, you want them to be like decent human beings.
Oh yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't know. I think community building.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, I wanted to get into the bulk of the questions here. For those who have been listening to the Cloud Machine podcast for a while, know that you know, sometimes we talk about the industry. Sometimes we talk about the creative process. Here on this one, I wanted to really deep dive on like the philosophy aspect of it, because Jade is that girly, you know?
So philosophy girly.
And it just really speaks to her current music and the process that she's been going through over the past few years. So anyway, I hope you you know, enjoy the next 45 minutes or whatever. Jade, I want to speak to your early memories and your early sort of connections with music. What is your earliest memory of connecting with music, and how did it shape your path as an artist?
There are a couple that I can remember. Yeah. So my grandparents on my mom's side are super musical. There's like, you know, 12 at any time, like 12 guitars hanging in the living room. There's like an upright piano. There's like I grew up around a lot of music, or just instruments in general. And I remember I would like sit at the piano whenever I would go over to their house and like try and make it sound good. And at one point I did think that I invented chords, just because I didn't know what they were, but I would like press one key and then go to the, you know, like not right next to each other to make a chord. So there was that. I watched August Rush as a kid with my grandparents. That was a big one where I was like, he can do it, I can do it.
Right. Yeah.
And then another big one, I think, that I've recently been coming back to is my parents listen to a lot of like pop top 40 radio, like Ryan Seacrest on the air kind of thing. And I remember I was in the car with my mom one time and a Maroon 5 song was playing, like a really old one. And me as a child listening to this song about his partner cheating on him, I go, what is this song about? You know, I'm like a kid. I don't know anything. And I'm like, mom, like, what is he talking about? And I'm like listening to the lyrics. And she explains the song to me a little bit. And I was like, oh, okay. So I was like innately, like, interested in what went into making a song. I wasn't just listening to it as like a 13-year-old in the back. But yeah, I think that I was just like very, very interested in how everything worked immediately. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's great. And like from the creation aspect and like from the entire sort of process of it.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
that's great.
I was just like, I just wanted to understand it. And from there, from that moment almost, I think I was like I could write songs, I could do that.
Yeah.
and then I started.
It does two things on my end that I want to highlight. August Rush,
yeah,
one of my favorite movies I don't want to say as a kid, because I discovered it maybe a little later on, but what a fantastic movie, just for like wonder and music. And it's a wreck for the people listening. Go check out August Rush. Also, you mentioned Ryan Seacrest. I was a kid, funny story. When I was a kid, so like the Hot 93.5 channel in Sudbury, Ontario.
Yeah.
Ryan Seacrest was the host. And okay. I always thought that like Ryan Seacrest was like in Sudbury, like he was like the Sudbury like host kind of thing, and it wasn't just like a radio program that was like literally blasted out to the world from LA or whatever it is. And once I saw him on like American Idol or whatever being the host, and I was like, what the heck is this guy doing here? Like, I didn't know that there's like a world outside of Sudbury's Hot 93.5 channel for Ryan Seacrest. Like, I thought he was just like this insane host. Like this guy's really good at his job. Like,
yeah. No, I honestly think that that's about the same thing. I didn't understand how the radio worked
until
I was on the launch, and then I got invited to my local radio station at the time, and I finally met the radio host that I've been listening to since I was a kid. And I was like, it was wild. I've never experienced anything like that.
And like the voice too,
Yes.
Yeah.
Whoa, you guys are not supposed to be here.
This doesn't make any sense.
You're supposed to be on the radio.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah. And also like the radio like hosts in Sudbury, like the local radio hosts are like celebrities, but like if you meet them in public, it's just like this random guy. It's like, "Oh, like I've never seen a picture of you ever." Like I wouldn't even expect you to look like this. Or like anything. Like I didn't even picture you physically, you know?
It's like, no.
It's like what, who's this person that sounds like the guy on the radio?
Yeah.
Anyway. How do you stay to your artistic vision in an industry that is constantly changing?
I mean, the industry is constantly changing, but like so is my artistic identity. Like yeah. As I grow and learn, I feel like I'm kind of growing alongside it, like not necessarily within it. Cause that's a whole other thing. But,
right.
I think it's mostly just like, they kind of grow in tandem.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. And also like, I've always been a really art forward person. I'm like, if it clicks, it clicks. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Like I can only do so much of my own promotion that like if it doesn't click with the industry side, that's fine. It still is like I still love the song. Yeah. I don't know.
Do you find yourself, I mean, you're telling me right now that you're sort of alongside the music industry as it grows and you're also growing. Do you find yourself influenced by what's happening in the industry sometimes?
Sometimes. I remember when the most recent Dua Lipa album came out, I was like, okay, I'm going to start making like pop again.
Right.
And then I tried it and I was like, no. I was like, it doesn't feel like me. So then I started writing like pitch songs that were like in that pop pocket and it kind of like suppressed that need for me to do it and like give in to the mainstream kind of thing. Cause I've been trying to get away from that for this current project that I'm working on. I'm trying to like be a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Almost got me.
I find myself influenced by different projects. I know we have a very common artist that, you know, we're inspired by, the both of us, Toronto based Saya Gray.
Yeah.
Which sort of inspired me to look beyond just the conforms of like how music can be sort of made, specifically made and written in 2024. Although it's not necessarily pop leaning, it still has some pop sensibilities while being, I don't know, a little bit more on the alternative side of things. How has Sai's music, and I want to talk about references later as well, but how has her music influenced like the current music that you're putting out?
I think the way, like even just sonically, it's not even like a lyrical thing, but I think listening to her music had changed something in my brain in the way that I'm like processing how something makes me feel.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times I was like, I mean, I still am, but a very lyric focused writer.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, it just, the lyrics need to be perfect. And then like the production will also be there. But I think with listening to her music, I realized how kind of sparse it can be lyrically and how impactful it can still be. And then when I went in to start making the stuff that I've been making, it was a lot of like, okay, the lyrics that I'm writing have this kind of like grit and depth to them that we need to match sonically.
Right.
And I think like a lot of times if we'd be writing something that was kind of like aggressive or kind of like hard hitting, a little bit scary sounding, I was like, all right, get the crunchy synths, let's go. Like, I'm like, need like epicness, we need like big drums, you know, things like that. And I think that her music not only like opened my eyes to that idea, but also made me feel okay with doing something a little bit left of center, especially considering I've done pop for the last like 10 years.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Can you speak a little bit to the creative process of doing this sort of collection of songs that you've been putting out and that you'll be continuing to put out compared to your early projects?
Yeah. I mean, everything that I've been working on comes from a place of, I would write or I would have an idea and I would sit there for like hours trying to like chip away at it and make it sound like I would try and chip away at like the words that I was using to make it sound more interesting, as opposed to being like, I don't know. I don't even have an example really, but it's kind of like, I was listening to a lot of Lorde has always been a big influence. And I remember seeing something, one of the producers that she's worked with was talking about how she'll just like, you know, you say like, oh, she walked across the street, and she would like chip away at that until it's like, she danced across the pavement. She like, you know, like to figure out a way more interesting way of saying something or a more poetic way.
Right. And
so when I went into making these songs, that was like something that was really important to me, to like push that boundary a little bit for myself, because it was a boundary of my own. And so now I have songs with like lyrical content in them where like my mom will listen to them and be like, what are you saying here? Like, what does that mean? And I'll be like, you don't get it. You don't get it. It's okay.
Right.
And then I'll explain it. I have this one line in a song that's like, I don't want to be wrapped up in silver. But initially what that started was like, how can I find a cooler way of saying, I don't want to find a silver lining, or like, I don't want to be second place to someone else. Like, I was just like, how can I make that sound cooler? And then I came up with, I don't want to be wrapped in silver. Anyways.
No, that's great. That is great. And it's a great example as well.
Yeah.
How do you balance the technical sort of technical skills and process of like writing, you know, a more complex song with maybe emotional expression or communicating sort of, you know, communicating in like, I don't want to say a more clear way for your audience. Like, is there now a balance between like, okay, making it a little bit more like complex and precise versus more like general and sort of open to anybody kind of thing to understand the music?
I mean, it's not necessarily something that I consciously think of.
Yeah.
But it's definitely like, okay, if we're going to have two like crazy kind of sounding lines, like poetic, really have to read into them lines, then maybe we'll just be like, love you, baby, you know, like afterwards, like kind of.
You just like, want to clarify.
Like, really like bring it all together with something that everyone will understand. I don't know. It's not, like I said, it's not something that I think about really. Because as I was writing it, this next like slew of songs, I was like really trying to make every line be something a little bit more intricate than I would normally write.
Right.
But it was all in an effort to like just become a better songwriter. That's what I was trying to do. And it ended up sounding really cool when I did. So we're doing okay.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't know. It's not something that I really, that I'm like, okay, because we did this, we now have to say something a little more simple. It just kind of like whatever works in the flow of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. Can you describe the moment when a song truly comes alive for you? Maybe it's in the process of sort of, I don't want to say changing your sound, but the evolving sort of aspects of Jade and your music. Can you describe the moment when you like sort of found that sound and when a song truly comes alive?
Yeah. I mean, I think it comes into its own,
Yeah.
like multiple different stages. Like for Absurdist Reality, for example, when we were making it, I remember it was like one of the first songs that I had written off the tail end of like putting out my last project. Mm-hmm. And I remember kind of working through it and hearing the production. And as soon as we laid down the vocals for it and did like all the harmonies and stuff, and we built up the production, and then I could like feel the bass in the song like hitting me in the studio. Yeah. That was one moment. But then I would say another one is when we just performed it live for the first time ever, which I didn't like clock in my brain that we had never done it before. But I think that like reflecting on that show that we just did and remembering that we played it for the first time, that was another moment where I was like, oh, this is like a real song that now people have heard.
Right.
I don't know. I think there's like multiple different, there's like checkpoints mm-hmm. until it's, you know, released. And even once it is released, that's like a whole different version of being alive.
Yes. How do you navigate that? Because I know a lot of artists are like, once it's released, it's like, okay, now like they're not responsible for it. Or this is yours now, you know, which is, you know, a lot of people say that and it's sort of cheesy, but there's definitely a degree of truth to that in regards to like the artist not necessarily having ownership over it anymore because it's just now the world's.
Yeah. Well, I think because before you release a song, it's like all your opinion about it and all of your feelings about it are exclusive to you. Like no one else outside of like family and friends who are naturally going to tell you that they love it.
Yeah.
It's like the only opinion you have is your own. And then when you put it out, you're like, it's like this wave of what other people think of it after sitting with it for who knows how long.
Right.
So I would say like, it's one of those things that it's still yours, but it kind of like takes on this new persona. It kind of like takes its mask off finally, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
How do your collaborations influence your personal sound, and what do you seek for in collaborators?
That's a good question. I don't know, because for this project specifically, I was really just working with like one producer.
Yes. Shout out.
Yeah. Shout out TJ.
TJ Whitelaw, everybody.
Yeah.
Amazing. Great producer, great guitarist.
I think a lot of it comes from just a willingness to be open to like any idea. I think that influences a lot of what I was doing, because with a lot of people that I was working with before, A, because I didn't know what I wanted to do, but also B, because a lot of the people I was working with before are like pop R&B producers.
Right.
So they kind of know production style, what they want to hear. And because I was like not fully knowing what I wanted to do, I kind of, you know, ran with it. And I mean, it works, but it's also like not entirely, it wasn't like heavily influenced by like my decision, if that makes any sense. It sounds kind of bad, it's not. But I think going into this new project, having like an openness and a willingness to just like, you know, change something entirely. Or what if we took all of this production out and put in a guitar here instead? Or like, you know, I think it's just a willingness to try anything mm-hmm. and kind of take the strangest requests and like run with them. Like when I first met TJ, I walked into the studio and I was like, yeah, so I just put out a project and now I'm thinking about doing like, imagine if Charlie XCX and the Strokes did like a collab.
Right.
That's kind of, he was like, okay, I'm down. When do we start?
Yeah.
And, you know, from there, it was a lot of like, we would start a song on a guitar and then I'd be like, we need synthesizers. We need really crunchy, wavy synthesizers to come in.
Yeah.
And I mean, you kind of hear that on I Don't Want to Hate You, less on Absurdist Reality, because it is very, like, very techno-y, you know, but yeah, with I Don't Want to Hate You, the whole song is like really guitar, piano, really pretty sounding, not super far off from what I was doing before. And then at the end of the song, we have that like massive, weird dance break. Yeah. We couldn't get enough of doing those. We did that on like three different songs over the course of that like couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. No, fantastic. What's the most profound lesson you've learned from another musician?
I don't know if it's profound. Like it feels kind of like a really simple thing to say, but
yeah,
that mutual support can go such a long way.
Yes.
Like I've been really lucky to come into some really amazing friends in music in the last couple of years that I've never had that before. And I was actually talking to my mom about it because at the show that we just did, like all of my music friends are all there.
Right.
And they're all like front row singing every lyric. And my mom was like, it's so nice to see that. And I was like, yeah, but like I do it for them too. And it's not like, we don't even think about it. It's not even like a, it's not even, it's just like the support that you can get from one another is so beyond helpful. And it's not something that I had ever had the pleasure of experiencing before.
Yeah.
I think that that's a lesson that I'm learning right now, is that it actually is so important. The people that you surround yourself with in such a vulnerable kind of space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you think that creating that like tight knit group of people was natural, or was it sort of intentional?
I think it was a mix of both, because I think that it was like I needed it to happen.
Sure.
Whether or not I knew that it was going to happen, or if it was going to be this wonderful group of people that I know now, I definitely needed people that understood the way that my brain works in terms of like trying to be in the music industry.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think like in a roundabout way, I had been looking for something like that, but I don't think, like, I do think that I kind of stumbled into it in the best way. And I'm like so, so grateful for it. But yeah.
Yeah, no, that's really great. And, you know, I've been seeing the friends and the people around you for a little bit of time now, and it's so great. And just their, even their energy at the front of the stage is great. And shout out Maddie specifically. So.
Yeah, Nia Natarada knows how to sing and dance at the front of a stage.
Yeah, she's great. How do you approach the concept of vulnerability in your songwriting?
I don't ever like consciously approach it. It just kind of happens. I think because when I started songwriting, it was very much so, it came from a place of me not being able to actually confront people with how I was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first song I ever wrote was this song about how my three best friends at the time in like grade eight, they had posted a photo of the three of them for National Best Friend Day.
Oh my God.
But it was initially a picture of the four of us, and they had cropped me out of it.
Oh.
And so because I was like, I don't know how to talk to them about how this hurt my feelings. So I'm just going to write a song about it, I guess. Cause sure. I was like, in grade eight, I'm like, I don't know how to like have conflict with people. I don't know how to do that. So I just didn't. And I think like starting from that kind of vulnerable place, I haven't known anything different.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't really like approach it. It just kind of is.
Totally. And you've just always sort of had that. That's great. What role does silence or space play in your music, especially these days?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm always surrounded by like sounds. Like when we get off this, like there's going to be music playing here. And my mom always says I don't put enough space in between some of my lyrics. Like I'm very wordy.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I'm not great with silence. I don't think that it plays a huge role.
Right. Maybe the question is, how have you sort of included the musical technique of dynamics in your new music, because that's for me, that's one of the biggest differences in your new sound compared to your past projects. It's very much dynamics and very much different structures, and not necessarily because your structures are still very like verse, pre, chorus, verse, pre, chorus, bridge, chorus, things like that. But there's just from my perspective, there's been just a very different approach of production and sort of simplifying, but also going crazy sometimes as well. Can you speak a little bit about that?
I think because we were doing, at least to me, what felt so intense in some of the choruses, I was like, we need to rein it in, because if we just keep going down this like chaotic, really heavy sounding kind of vibe, people are gonna, you know, start to like have a panic attack because this is like really overwhelming sounding.
Yeah.
And I think it was just, it wasn't really like, again, I keep saying nothing was conscious, like it just kind of happened, but I think it kind of needed it. Like, you need a breather after like a big chorus, like what the Absurdist Reality chorus is or the Don't Leave Me Alone chorus is. Like, especially with Don't Leave Me Alone, which is not out yet and it won't be out for a while, but it's like really, really big, intense lyrically and production wise in the chorus there. And then all of a sudden everything's back out and it's just like this really pretty vocal.
Yeah.
And it's like guitars again. I think when you're writing things with such depth, you do kind of need to like, it feels almost like you're almost out of the atmosphere and then it's like, oh no, just getting your back. Yeah. So I think it was like, it was weird because it happened without planning, but.
Yeah. Well, I honestly, I think a lot of the best, maybe not the best, but the more natural creative processes are like that. You know, it's not necessarily conscious, but it's almost like, okay, what comes to mind and what fits just naturally. And you know, no, I think it's great. It all fits together. And just giving you your flowers for that, and TJ as well. So
thank you.
There you go. sorry?
I'll pass along the message.
Yeah, please. Or TJ if you're listening to this, shout out. I wanted to ask you how you navigate periods of creative block or doubt.
Oh, not great. I don't navigate them great.
Right.
I think it is like, I'll go through periods of like really low self-esteem with everything.
Mm.
And then one day I'll wake up and be like, what am I doing? I'm really self-aware in the sense where I'm like, I need to like relax a bit, because I'm so like, I'll do 10 things in a week and then like 3 weeks go by where I'm like, I have nothing to do.
Right.
And I'm like freaking out. But I also have gotten a lot better at kind of like giving myself time and space to like just be a regular human and not like trying to necessarily like always be doing something, because I think it's really important, at least for me, to take space from music so that I can come back and do something a little bit more productive. Because when you're making music, you're very influenced by the things that you're making. It's not only influenced by things around you, but it's influenced by everything that you've been doing. And so sometimes I find I get like very similar patterns to like production ideas or melody ideas or lyrical content. And then I'm like, I'm just writing a different version of the same song over and over again. Like, I need to take a break.
Right.
And so I think that I've gotten a lot better at navigating that. I'm realizing the pattern here. I need to like take a few days off. I need to take a month off. I need to just like sit around and play Zelda for a month. And then I'll do that.
Fantastic. You touched on this a little bit just a few seconds ago, but how does your environment influence your music? And do you have a specific setting where you feel the most creative? Or, and I'll add setting, but also like brain space.
Yeah. I think brain space is really important to me.
Yeah.
I think that I have to be in a place where I feel like I am able to create, because if I'm like, if something really horrendous has happened, then I definitely need like a couple days of like a breather before I can go and like make something out of it.
Yeah.
But I would say the environment that I create the best in is somewhere where I'm like comfortable with the people I'm with. Cause I feel like sometimes when you get into a session with someone that you've never worked with before, it can be a little bit anxiety inducing and you're not necessarily going to get the best product, which, I mean, sometimes it happens. It's happened to me as well, where it's like, these are brand new people. And then we've made like a great song. But I think like the whole energy and of the space that you're in when you're trying to make music is really important to me. I'm like, I need a blanket. I need like a warm drink. I need to have eaten something so that I'm like just fully, honestly, it's like a very similar way to how I play video games. I need to be like wrapped in a blanket, feeling cozy.
Mm-hmm.
And also I feel like when you're doing that, it almost, you almost trick your brain into being like, you don't have to stress about writing a song right now. Cause sometimes you'll be in sessions where you're like, I must write something. Like I did like a pitch camp and I'm like on my computer, like freaking out,
right?
Make the best thing that I possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And, but like when it comes to writing the best thing for me, at least I have to be like sprawled out on a couch or something and like just on my computer.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's great. And
very,
like,
very comfort driven.
Yeah. And it's good that you know that about yourself, right? Because it's like, it's only after so long that you sort of get to know that about yourself and where you can thrive and things like that.
Yeah. Well, and also like the places in which being sprawled out on the couch with a blanket around you with a laptop on you is like acceptable and professional.
Right.
it's a good balance.
Yes. Yeah. If you could only convey one message through your music, what would it be and why?
A message. I would say, like, no matter how hard things feel, they're never as bad as you think they are. Could be a lot worse. I feel like that's what my music lately has been saying. It's been like, it might seem like it's bad, but there's still a verse after this very intense chorus. So
there's
a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes. There's always a next step. That's funny.
Yes, exactly. It's never like, you know, I mean, you know, the chorus to the one song I'm talking about, but like, we're never actually that close to dying. It's okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. How do you envision your music evolving in the next few years past this project that you're producing right now?
I would say, I mean, I hope to keep doing what I'm kind of doing right now. Cause it feels really good. It feels like someone plugged a USB into my brain and then just like downloaded it.
Right.
That's
a great feeling.
Yeah. And I've never felt like that before.
Right.
So I kind of hope that it just keeps growing in the way that it's growing. And, you know, like I always want to be a better songwriter and a better vocalist and a better performer. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of just hoping that because this feels so new, it kind of feels like I'm starting over in a weird way.
Yeah.
But I kind of hope that it just continues to like build on top of one another. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
I just kind of want it to like get better.
sure.
And the most simple way of putting it, I just want to get better at the way that I'm going.
Yeah.
And I mean, it'll evolve the way that it's meant to. It's again, never a conscious thing. It's just kind of something that happens over time. So yeah.
No, that's fantastic. I think if everybody strives to just get better, I think that is fantastic. And better, but also just more specific to what they want. And like, your wants always like evolve through time and through the years. And when you're, like you're saying, like influencing and influenced and hearing other projects and stuff, like, you know, I just hope that that's something that people always want to thrive, is just to become better.
For sure.
Looking back, what advice would you give to your younger self that's just starting in music?
Oh, goodness. I think I would tell myself to go a little easier on myself. I'm like violently hard on myself.
Sure.
And I think that it's done some good things for me, but I also think that like just knowing when to take a break, especially given like who I was influenced by at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that taking time off is really, really important. And I think it only took me, you know, 9 years to realize that. But I think I would say, yeah, like give yourself a little more credit for the things that you've accomplished. And remember that like time is moving quickly, but also like painfully slowly.
So yeah, yeah.
You know?
Fantastic. How do you hope that your new single, Absurdist Reality, will impact listeners? That's my first question. And also, just for context for the people, we're recording this on the Tuesday before its release. So just asking you now in the present moment, how do you hope your new single, Absurdist Reality, will impact listeners on Friday?
I'm hoping that people will, this is going to sound really weird, so hear me out.
Please.
I'm hoping that people will accept like where this new project is going, because I feel like the first single off the project was more of an intro to
right.
it. Versus Absurdist Reality does feel quite different from what I was putting out before.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, it's like a really, really, it's an older version of like some of my first releases.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
are a little bit different. But I don't know. I just kind of hope that people will listen to it and hear the growth from the last project.
Right.
That's kind of all I'm hoping for at this point, is just for people to listen to it. And of course I want people to like it.
sure.
But I just hope that people can hear like how far everything's kind of come,
mm-hmm.
and how different, how I'm in a different headspace.
That's yeah. Yeah. And what can people expect for the other songs on this project?
I don't know, actually. Like, it gets crazy. But we have a lot of dynamic.
Yes.
We have a lot of, like, really big songs. And then we have, like, some more chill ones. So I think there's something for everyone in this project.
Yeah.
Because we have, like, our slow kind of, like, ballad, sad, cry yourself to sleep kind of songs. And then we also have, like, I should probably visit a rage room kind of songs.
Yeah. No, I've had the chance to listen to the project and yeah, it's great. And I can't wait for people to listen and continue on listening.
Me too.
I wanted to wrap up this pod with what we call the producer's game on this podcast. So for those who, maybe it's your first time listening, we play a few games on the podcast. One is called the Dream Fest game, which is basically giving our guests the chance to basically design their own sort of festival lineup and stuff. But with Jade this week, I thought it would be interesting to produce basically her dream album from the executive producer's chair. So I'm basically going to ask her who would be slotted in these categories and slots. And these can be people that are dead or alive. So anybody.
Got it.
And I don't know, maybe I didn't, you know, plan this, but maybe it's also fictional characters I want to add just because we've been chatting about movies and stuff like that.
Like Shrek is the artist.
Yeah, just as a fun game here. Yeah. So basically asking you who the artists, producers, the genre of music, the band, the studio and city. But this can be like, and for you, especially when we talk about environments and stuff, earlier, it doesn't need to be necessarily like a studio. It can be like your couch on Mars or something like that. What era this would be released in, and then also the live performance concept. What would you do for the live performance? And also for yourself specifically, I've also added who would be the writers on this project.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is a big process, big questions, but. Yeah. But I also want to have fun with this. So please let me know. What do you want to talk about first?
Okay. So artist, here's the thing. I kind of want it to be me. I want to build.
Sure. Yeah, please. Let's do that.
Okay. So if I'm the artist.
Yeah.
I want to write a song with Lord. I just want to know what that's like.
Okay.
I really want to know what that's like. Her yeah. song is insane, and I just want to like watch that.
Yeah.
I feel like Lord would be one of the writers. Who else? I'm trying to think. I'm like blanking on every person that I look up to. It's just crazy.
It could be artists as well, like artists and other yeah. artists. And
I mean, I would want Lord to be a writer for sure.
Yeah.
I want to say Kevin Parker, but also I feel like they're going to producers.
Sure.
But also like Dua Lipa just did that. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I think
he can be a producer.
Yeah, he can be a producer.
Okay.
Yeah. God, I'm like blanking on everyone.
It's okay. Any fictional characters in those writers or producers?
Mm.
Also, this can be dead or alive.
That's true. Yeah, I don't know. Me as the artist, Lord as one of the writers.
Yeah.
Maybe Claro as a writer too.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Her new album is Getting Me. Get me.
Yeah.
Oh, another producer. I would love to work with George Daniel.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
Would love.
Yeah.
What
would be the genre of the album?
Genre is gonna be pop. It's gotta be alt pop.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's gotta be like some weird pop.
Yeah. And then the band, are there some people that you'd want on the record just to maybe contribute musically to the album, maybe play some songs or
I don't actually like, I'm not very knowledgeable on like really, really talented like musicians, like what their names are.
That's okay. Yeah. What about some fictional characters here? Like if you could have like anybody play drums or like play guitar, or like even if they don't play guitar drums.
I want August Rush to
there you go.
Course.
Yeah.
yeah. Who would I like to see on the drums? I'm trying to think of like a really funny fictional. I feel like Bob from Bob's Burgers should be the drummer.
Okay. Fantastic. What about a bass player?
I keep wanting to say Shrek and it's not good.
He would slap on the bass for sure.
Oh, you know what? I'm actually going to use a video game character.
Yeah.
And I would say, I want Mario from like Super Mario Bros. On the bass.
That's crazy. He's holding it down, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's just so steady.
Yeah. No, he's reliable.
Yeah. Yeah. Reliable is funny. What about the studio in the city?
I've always wanted to work out of New York. And that's probably not going to stay true when I actually do it.
Right.
Just because I feel like I'll be overwhelmed and I'll want to be in like a cabin in the woods somewhere.
Right.
But for now, I'm going to say a studio in New York. But I feel like I would want it to be like the studio that I've been working out of.
Right. But just in New York.
In New York.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's great.
I mean, pretty much what we're doing now, like in Toronto.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's very similar, yeah.
Maybe I'll
move it to LA. With Colipe as well.
Maybe I'll move it to LA. Colipe has to come.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm taking that with me.
Yeah.
Along with the studio.
Colipe, for those who don't know, shout out Colipe, the Thai restaurant in Toronto.
So good. I actually ordered it last night.
Okay. Fantastic. And then what era would this album be in?
Like current.
Current
day, yeah,
that's great. And then, what about a live performance concept? Is Mario playing the bass live as well, or
I feel
Bobby
like
Burgers on the drums?
I really need someone to draw this image. Yeah. Me on the mic, Kevin Parker is playing guitar,
yeah,
and then Mario and Bob's Burgers
holding it down.
Yeah, yeah, a cursed image.
Yeah, very cursed.
The only reason this happened is because I genuinely couldn't think of anyone else. It's just the thing that came to my mind, and I was like, yeah, sure.
No, that's fantastic. I push you into that direction. But that's how we conclude the episode. Thanks so much, Jade.
Thank you so much.
Today we've had the absolute pleasure of chatting with Jade and discovering her profound journey in music and her creative process, from her earliest music memories to now releasing her latest single, Absurdist Reality. It's clear to me, and it's clear to many others, that she's pushing the boundary of recording and writing, and I really need to recommend her latest single, but you know, even her past projects, and to look out for her new music coming out soon. To our audience, you can connect with Jade and stay updated on her latest projects and her latest music by following her on social media at It's Jade Music. It'll be in the link below in the description below. Thanks for tuning in again, and don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, and leave a review on this podcast. This podcast is made for networking, not necessarily networking, but resources and educating ourselves on the music industry through the experiences of music industry professionals. Also, be sure to join our vibrant community on the AIDS Network. Whether you're a musician, industry professional, you know, somebody that's interested by the music industry, you can find like-minded individuals on this Discord channel. It's, you know, we chat, gain valuable insights. And you can also access exclusive conversations and insights on this Discord. Visit the links in the episode description to join today. Thanks, everybody. Stay safe and see you next week. Bye.